Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the tornado, Tony Benicat.
Wow, loud and clear. And Tom, Psychic Tom is on the line right away.
Yes, sir.
Eddie, reporting for duty.
Yes, sir. Ready to go.
Our big show. Antonio Hunter.
Hey, Trick.
Big deal.
Tom, I did get your email today, and I will discuss with you my thoughts on the Hopkins-Kovalev fight.
Yeah, this is just so intriguing. I mean, every time I thought Bernard is not going to be able to pull it off, he always does. But this is going to be a tough assignment. But styles make fights, so I'm looking forward to this one.
Chance to watch the Friday night fights?
ESPN? You know what? I don't think I was home on Friday. I don't remember, unless I fell asleep real early. No, I did. I remember because I was in the recliner, and I was done. I was beat. So, no, I did not get a chance to see the Friday night fights, but I got a lot to talk about the Saturday night fights.
Get on it. What do we got? We got a lot of MMA news, female MMA stuff, Gina Carano and Randy Couture. It's actually been some interesting. Carano. Guy, yeah, I wrote about back in the day when I first met. Josh Risby. Disgusting story surrounding him. Arrested twice in 4 days for domestic violence. And this was fighting for the UFC not too long ago. Not working for them anymore. Ugly situation there. Not only used his wife, I guess he actually used the dog to help. Sick the dog on her. I read it. Ugly shit. But we got a great interview tonight scheduled for 8:30. Tony and Carver.
8:02.
Keep your fingers crossed. He's going to call in. We're going to get it done this time. We had a little miscommunication last time. I think the publicist thought he was like Muhammad Ali when he said he could shut the lights off and be in bed before it got dark. Sent her the link to the show, and she thought, Magic Man, you know, that's Antonio's nickname. He already had it done. He's magic. Yeah. We're going to get it real for real done tonight. So looking forward to that one. But we had a lot of boxing over the weekend. The Friday night fights, actually, I thought that one of the most entertaining fights was on the undercard. It was like a couple of six-round fighters that just went at it, and it turned out in the last round. The kid was kind of leaving his chin out there a little too much and ended up getting knocked out. So.
Well, you know, Rich, I think it gets back to that cliche of never look past anyone. I mean, you never know what could happen.
Yep.
You know, if I remember the opening fight, you know, we had the favorite, and you know, we had the guy with the good record, and then we had the other guy that had a few more defeats, and he was brought there to lose, but no one gave him the script. And what an interesting fight that turned out to be. I mean, he just came and says, I'm bringing it, and I really thought that it was close going into that last round, and then one punch can turn it around, but very entertaining.
That was the last fight I did see on Friday, And we were actually saying to ourselves, like, man, it'll be nice to see this young kid pull it off. Because you're right, he was brought in there thinking, like, he was brought in there to lose, let's be honest. And you're right, he was making it a hell of a fight. And it's like, oh, damn. You know, he might be able to pull this off, and next thing you know, it's a kaboom. There was a little bit of, you know, should the fight have been stopped at that point? It was one punch. But I can agree with the stoppage because you can tell the fighter was legitimately hurt. And
oh, yeah.
A few more shots, you know, would have been unprotected.
So we got some big fights ahead again in boxing. Sergey Kovalev, of course, now fading away for his fight with Bernard Hopkins with a fairly quick knockout. But the thing was, he was down early in the fight, from what I've read. So pretty interesting situation there.
Well, you know what, and as Tom, you know, pointed out, you know, how do I see this fight unfolding? And it's hard to say. Number one, you're looking at a guy right now that is decimating fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, obviously his opponent this past weekend was not a guy that was well known. And he's decimated fighters. And then you get a guy he's going in there against. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer. But it's going to be only a matter of months shy of turning 50. And this is, you know, remember back in the day, I remember George Foreman, one of his worst color commentary performances ever during the Hopkins Trinidad fight back 13 years ago. He's like, boy, like Hopkins' legs are starting to go on him. He's 36 years old. He's an old 36. And I'm like, George, you know, you came back at 38. You know, you should be the last one trying to, you know, call somebody old. And at 13 years later, Bernard's going to basically unify the light heavyweight title. Bernard has made a habit, especially over the last decade or so, of really thwarting or neutralizing, for the best term out there, slow-footed big punchers. Go back to start with Phil Trinidad when he was, at the time, ancient 36 years old. And what did he do? He basically said he looked for Trinidad to make a little shuffle with his feet, and he knew that meant the left hook was coming. So he would wait for him to make that, and he would just step to his left, away from where the left hook would be coming. And basically, he took Trinidad's best weapon away from him. Then he would get there, and he had the losses to Jermaine Piatto, which I don't think either one of them were really losses. But he won the first fight, the second fight, I screwed and draw. You know, they were going to wait to fight our guest tonight, Antonio Tarver. And a lot of people were thinking, man, Hopkins is over 40 years old. He's his first fight at light heavyweight. He's fighting a guy that's the best light heavyweight in the world right now. And Hopkins win almost every round. And it could have been Tarver being a little lethargic with the loss of weight after making the Rocky movie. And we'll ask him that tonight, how much that really affected him. But at the same time, Bernard put on a great performance. Fast forward, he put the guy against Calvani. He struggles. Because Calvani, a lot of movement, fast, almost slap-type punches. He steps up, he fights, you know, guys like John Pascal. Tavares Crowd looks fantastic, dominates those fights. Or Ben Shumanov dominates that fight. He fights a guy like Chad Dawson, he can't get on track. And Dawson, who's trying to make it basically, you know, a lot of movement, staying on the outside. It was a fight that did not suit Hopkins' style. He fights best against guys that come straight in. Look what he did to Kelly Pavlik. Dominating Pavlov, who was a slow-footed, big puncher. Guy was knocking everybody out. Sound familiar? Now, you know what Hopkins is going to come out there to do. he is going to come out there and he is going to try to make Kovalev go a few rounds. Kovalev's been knocking guys out. I think in the last 7 years, I don't think he's gone more than four rounds. So what's Hopkins going to do that first 1 or 2 rounds? He's going to move. He's going to jab. He's going to feint. He's going to use angles. Because it's just like, you know, the basic, you know, math there. Shortest distance, 2-2-1. So it's the 2 points in a straight line. He's going to try to neutralize that from Kovalev. And he's going to let try to, he's going to, you know, in the first 2 rounds, he's going to make Kovalev do all the work. And he's just going to move, jab, maybe tap him with a right hand, try to force him into mistakes, try to force him to get a little frustrated. And at 50 years old, can his leg sustain him for 12 rounds? Well, they've been doing it the last 2 years. They've been doing it against big punchers like Tavares Crowe. They've been doing it against guys like John Pascal. This fight, I'm not saying that Bernard's going to win, but if there was a style for him to fight that he can pull this off, this is it.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm thinking. That's exactly the way I'm seeing it. Yeah.
I think Max Kellerman worked best similar to that. Bernard off, I heard. I didn't actually see the clip, but I read about it. It sounded like Bernard turned off the set. That effect. Like, do you think you can pull this off?
Do I think you can pull it off? Absolutely. I mean, the guy's a legend. The guy's a first out of the Hall of Fame for a reason. I mean, will he? That's hard to say. What the attitude, you know, how much of his, you know, legs are going to be able to sustain him? Is he going to be able to, you know, keep on the outside, keep moving? Is he going to be able to stay off the ropes? This is a guy that, remember, in his career, and his career span, I mean, you figure 21 years on a championship level. His first world title fight was in 1993. So he's been on the championship level for 21 years.
Yeah, that's just incredible.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of my coworkers today, and we were talking about it. And he's like, man, just imagine if he didn't have that stint in jail and didn't start boxing so late. And it's like, you know, how just really amazing that is. Because you figure his first world title fight against Roy Jones, he was 28 years old. This was back in 1993. He was 28 years old. Who would have thought he'd still be going at it 21 years later on a championship level? Now, you go back, and his world title fight spanning 21 years, the man has suffered 4 knockdowns in 2 fights. He was knocked down 2 times in his second world title fight, which was a dubious draw. I'm forgetting the guy's name. It was in the guy's home country, Segundo Mercado. And it was down like Ecuador or somewhere like that. And Hopkins went down twice, and they said still should have got the decision. Yeah, he comes back, beats the hell out of Mercado, wins the title. But 20 years later, 18 years later, he's fighting John Pascal, and he suffers 2 early knockdowns against Pascal. And Pascal's home town, Montreal. And it was a dubious draw where everybody out there except the judges saw Hopkins won. He comes back and beats the crap out of Pascal. And those are 2 pretty good punching guys. And even though Hopkins went down 4 times total, if you go back and you look at them, you can never really say, oh, my God, he was hurt. He had to survive. There were more of both of them, like flash knockdowns or off-balance knockdowns or punches that kind of caught them, you know, and just kind of, you know, caused him to lose his footing and go down. You can never really say the man was legitimately hurt when you thought he was in danger of getting stopped or knocked out. So he's got the chin, but more importantly than having the chin, if you can have a worst chin in the world, you can have a Jake Romano-like chin. But the most important thing is, and Tom, I think you'll agree with me, what's your best defense? What's the best way not to suffer a knockdown or knock out?
I'm sorry, the best way to what?
What's your best way? I would say the chin is the last line of defense. What would be your first line of defense against getting knocked out or knocked down?
A little bit of movement, head movement.
I would say just not getting hit clean.
Yeah.
It's hard to get knocked out if you don't get hit clean.
Exactly. And the thing I keep focusing on here, I wonder where the mental edge will be, because Bernard would be a very hard guy to psych out. I mean, there's nothing that's going to come at him that he hasn't already seen before. So
exactly.
There's going to be so many, and I don't think that Sergey is going to play mind games with him, but I wonder where Kolov is or Kolov, I always have a block about his name. Kolovev, right? Kolovev, well, yeah. But the question is just how will he feel if this gets into those later rounds and his punches aren't having the same effect on Bernard, and Bernard's kind of taking the ball away from him psychologically. How will that go? That's what's so fascinating
exactly.
about this to me.
You know, all you need to know about Sergey Kovalev is his last fight was refereed by Sparko Lee. That was the ref's name.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well.
No. Actually, it's kind of funny. The point where I was talking about Gennady Golovkin, and he kept talking about, you know, different matchups with the analyst on ESPN, and came up to Gennady Golovkin. Against two. And, of course, they put it on a loop on YouTube. But it was kind of funny. We would have thought that it would be against two. You can say the same thing for Kovalev. You know, he's got a lot of against two. He's one of the best guys turned out to be on Friday. Not so long. Back in 2013, Gabriel Campillo, this guy who was undefeated, Thomas Wayne, had one of those, I guess, against two records, 17-0. And Campillo, man, what a fight. He cut him up, and then the blood started getting into the eye of Junior there, Williams Jr., and Williams Jr. actually came over and apologized to Teddy on camera.
Well, you know, again, to quote Teddy, how often do we hear that phrase that boxing is three-quarters mental? And I think you've seen the example right there that Thomas Williams Jr. maybe never been in a scenario quite like that. And you could just see him mentally just trying to put things back together again, and it didn't work. So, you know, I think Teddy gave him a pretty good pep talk. But that was Exhibit A on how true that is about the mental aspect of things. So important.
Well, it's interesting. It's a perfect segue into the argument. There's, a lot going around about the Commonwealth Games now. It's one of the first amateur competitions where they're not going to use headgear anymore. And I guess the United States isn't involved because, you know, it's like the Commonwealth. Not yet anymore. So it's a bunch of different countries over there. And I guess, I don't have the story right in front of me right now, but... what happened was at least one guy should have been in the finals or should have gone on to a final and get cut. So, I'm now about a reverse decision to head here because of opportunities for these guys, especially because they're fighting 1 week in tournaments like the Commonwealth. A lot of European countries like Scotland and Australia don't have it, but so it's an interesting argument, but kind of goes back to that story about Jack Dempsey. I guess you got to bathe your skin in some brine.
Yeah.
because they're saying actually that they don't want to reverse it. You know, it's like impossible to go back to Iron Headgear after they decided to scrap it now, which kind of to me. They're sticking to me. Yeah, Sergey Kovalev, I don't think he's going to be able to bring anything to Bernard Hopkins. If Hopkins can keep him at a distance. I don't think Sergey Kovalev really fought anybody. Cedric Agnew, 26-0. Nathan Cleverley, 26-0. He gave him their first losses. Those were a couple of the best two fighters he ever faced. And Hopkins has been in the names that are way better than those, too.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
World-class experience.
But we also have to look at the other side of the equation. As Tony was saying, Hopkins is going to be, I think the fight's in December. Am I right on that? December?
So November 8th, which is 2 months short of Hopkins' 50th birthday.
Right. Okay. So at some point, Father Time has to set in. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but we've got that issue. And then also, maybe Kovalev is just hits harder than anyone else. I mean, I don't know. Of course, like you said, you were saying, Tony, if you can't hit him, you can't really hurt him. But we'll see how his technique is, and we'll see if he can shift gears, which Kelly Pavlik was unable to do in their fight, if you flash back on that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Travis Fulton won over the weekend. Now he has 21 boxing wins, 37.
Oh, cool.
He's the guy who's going through. But on that undercard of the Kovalev fight, too, we had Isaac Chalemba beat Corey Cummings. Joey Dueko. Dueko. He's David William.
Rich, when you set out that email, I think it was yesterday, about topics, I picked that one out, Joey, because I got to see clips of the fight. Some of Joey's friends had, videoed it, on their camera phones and posted it. And some of it, not only did we interview him before, but I've got to talk to him, got to meet him a couple times down at the fights. And yeah, Joey's a kid, to see him, you just instantly got to like him. You know, he's a big, thick, powerful big guy. I mean, he's 240 pounds, he's 5'10". You know, he's big, barrel chest. He kind of looks like Jimmy Anvil Neidhart a little bit. That's what I like him to do. My task, when we went to the last fight, and he fought a guy by the name of Mark Rydell, and it was West Philly, Northeast Philly kind of rivalry thing there. And when Joey came into the arena, him and his brother, they looked like twins, they came in and had the bags over it, and the big, burly, barrel chest guy. My dad's like, what are these guys, wrestlers? They think it's a wrestling show tonight? He goes, I thought they were the Bushwhackers. I said, oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, come on. But if you go in there and you see guys that 5'10", 240 pounds, big barrel chest, what do you expect? You expect this guy to fight kind of like a Rocky Marciano style. Get in there, you know, no technique, no just going out there and just bluffing you down. But this kid had a lot of amateur fights. He was a highly talented amateur. He is a very good boxer. Now, if you watch the clips of his fight from last weekend, he was like a shark smelling blood because he was in there firing bombs, overhand rights and left hooks, and he was hitting this guy with like the arsenal, and that's how he knocked him out in the first round. But when I saw him fight against Mark Rydell, who was about 6'3", about 230 pounds, you know, well conditioned, looks like, cut out of a granite, long arms. Would you expect him to dominate on the outside and Dueko's best chance to be on the inside? Yeah, Joey outboxed him from the outside out-jabbed a taller man who was taller by about 4 or 5 inches. Out-jabbed him, worked his way in to land his power shots. For a big, thick, bruising-looking guy, very accomplished boxer. And now that he's got a good management team, I'm not saying he's going to go out there and beat the Klitschko's. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and beat the Deontay Wilders of the world or the Bernie Stevenson's of the world. But you know what? The kid is a good prospect. And you know what? And more importantly, he's fun to watch, and he's a hell of a nice kid.
General of Nevada, filed on July 31st, and he said, it says that he was supposed to submit to a urinalysis or chemical test if the commissioner or representative of the commission directed him to do so, and the Nevada Attorney General's office asking for compensation for investigative costs, attorney fees, and other costs. Silva has 20 days to formally respond to the complaint. And he was at their meeting, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, the June 17th meeting, and he admitted he took a banned diuretic for rehabbing a wrist injury, but he has yet to be formally sanctioned. And he was removed from UFC 175. He argued that the whole situation was a big misunderstanding between him and the commission due to a language barrier. For the record, he hasn't failed the test in 49 professional mixed martial arts contests, but they don't treat the avoidance of a drug test any harsher than a failed one, so. Silva's 38 years old. He's 4-5 in the UFC since December and has been on the sidelines since scoring a knockout over Brian Stann last March at UFC on Fuel 8. We have about a couple minutes here before Romeo's going to be calling in. Lucky. Knock on wood, everybody.
You know what? I want to bring in before Antonio calls in. We were talking a little bit earlier about Sparkle Lee. I thought she did a tremendous job. You know, the only complaint I would have had on this is if the fight would have gotten rough and tough and there would have been a lot of, inside brawling and, you would need to, because these guys are light heavyweights. They're 175 pounds. They were taller guys. And she was a petite young lady. I don't know if she would have been able to physically break them up if needed. I've seen fights where, like, sometimes, even if you go back to the Tyson-Lewis fight back in 2002, they utilized Eddie Cotton for that fight just because he was a big guy, 6'4", 260-some-pound former heavyweight fighter, because they were worried, especially with Tyson's volatile nature, that it was going to be a situation where they may have needed a large physical referee to keep control. On the flip side of that, back out in Las Vegas, Nevada, we had a fight between Brandon Rios and, what's the other boy's name? I don't have it in front of me. Diego Chavez, I believe it was, and that erupted in utter chaos because the referee, Vic Draculich, who I've outspoken about several times, lost control early.
There's a wrestling match, too, broke out.
Oh, it was a wrestling match. It was a combination of wrestling, boxing, MMA, and street fighting. And the boxing took the back seat to it.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad. It was terrible. And Vic did a very poor job.
Terrible, but entertaining.
Well, yeah, you could say that.
I see you put Madonna in with both of them and make all three fight each other. Actually, one of them got a busted collarbone, I think, Rios.
Yeah, Rios did. That's what Rios was thinking about. He's like, the guy was roughing him up on the inside so much that, you know, he was doing damage to his eye, you know, he was doing damage in his shoulder. And he said, yeah, he got injured on that.
Jesse Vargas also got a win.
Yeah, Jesse Vargas is also another topic that I wanted to discuss. It was a good fight, but once again, I got to see Jesse on the Pacquiao Bradley too, a couple months ago in Vegas. Jesse's a talented young fighter. Unfortunately, this fight was marred by that fight, hometown officiating. That fight was very close. I think the HBA judges had it about right, which if they had Jesse up by a point or two, I could agree with that, or if they had it a draw, I don't remember. But I could definitely see a draw. I mean, Jesse was dominating early, but, you know, his opponent started coming back on him. And, you know, they were saying, like, you come all the way from, both from Russia and you're going to get screwed. Well, I can't say that he got screwed by not winning the fight, but he definitely got screwed that, well, two of the judges only gave him two rounds. I mean, come on, seriously?
Yeah, he had Jamal Tabuja over earlier, Gina Carano talked about for this immediate title shot with Ronda Rousey, but one person doesn't agree with it. He said he hasn't talked to Gina. She hasn't really reached out to him about the situation, but he says he thinks she's capable, but just doesn't think an immediate matchup is a good idea. He said, technically it's interesting. Gina's a good striker. Not really seen Ronda Rousey face a solid striker. Said, I think that Gina had an Achilles heel even when she was at her 5 years ago with the grappling side of things. My sincere hope is that they give her a chance to get up to speed, get back into fight shape, and really kind of show up her grappling technique on that side of her game. Then it would be an amazing fight. I think it's silly. It'd be silly for Gina. I think Gina has way more to lose than she has to gain stepping right into a title fight after off the mats and training environment for the last 5 years. Frankly, I think she's done an amazing job with her movie career. I don't know why she would want to do that. Like, give her a chance to really get her feedback on her and get back up to technical speed where she was. It would be a very interesting fight. So, kind of puzzled. But, I think it's a personal decision. I think if she's got more to do or feels like she has more to do in that cage, then she needs to settle that and come back and make a run at it to a 100%. Those are personal decisions. That's not for me to say. It is the interesting part. You know, Randy's got some bad history with the UFC. He says, I think from a business standpoint, absolutely, Zuffa and the UFC are going to put a ton of money in their pockets for that fight, whether they let Gina prepare properly or not. That's not really a question. I think that's a huge fight. For a long time, Gina Carano was the queen of MMA. She is exactly what Ronda Rousey is to MMA right now. So to have those two finally meet up is a huge fight on the business side of things. Obviously, my loyalty and my concern is for Gina and that she gets a fair shake and she gets up to speed, get a couple fights under her belt, get back on track, get back into the former shape, former tactical prowess that we're used to seeing her at. To throw her right in against Ronda Rousey in the very first fight, Ronda is firing on all cylinders right now. Has been very active and as sharp as she can be right now. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. What do you think about that, Tom?
Well, I'm just kind of talked out on that whole thing. And you notice how the buildup is starting now, though. Boy, it's just that crescendo is just getting a little bit louder. But I still can't conceive of Gina getting Ronda in her first fight back. But I just cannot work up the excitement about the fight. I mean, I just don't think Gina, even if she'd been fighting all these years, would have the takedown defense to keep it standing, her only chance, or the ground defense to hold off the submissions. I don't see it. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but until someone can show that, right now I think it looks like a mismatch to me.
Right.
But it'll be a money fight, and I think you hit that other angle pretty good, and it's so ironic. You know, we were just talking about it, and then after the show you sent that link to the email, you know, that link to that exact topic. Yes, indeed, sex sells.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. Like, you know, people are looking past whether it's going to be a competitive fight. They're saying, oh, you know, money, money, money. I'm going to make money. And if it's not good for either person, they're not going to do it. I think that's probably why they're running into so much difficulty trying to get the fight signed. Because this Hollywood attorney is probably thinking about, you know, what's this girl's legacy going to be if she goes and blows this opportunity in her first fight, you know? Why not put her up against she could beat, set her up with a couple fights, and then have her fight the big one? You know, then she'll have more of a story to sell to Hollywood on top of what she already has. So I think that's more of the thing they're trying to work out, because you don't ever sign like a one-fight deal with the UFC either, you know?
No. I mean, and I think for the hardcore fans, the true fans of the sport, it's like any other sport. I want to see competition. I mean, I want to believe that, you know, I don't care what it is. Baseball, I mean, I don't want to see a high school team taking on a major league team. I want to see both teams having a chance. And it just seems like that they can't seem to, that it's just not working as smooth as they thought, I think.
No. We also had a crazy situation I mentioned a little bit earlier. Josh Crispy, former UFC fighter, arrested twice in 4 days after allegedly assaulting his wife. This is in Middleborough, Massachusetts, just short of the Cape Cod area. One police officer called it, quote, the worst case of domestic abuse I've ever seen, unquote. And Crispy was a featherweight title contender. He ultimately was 0-4 inside the octagon. He was arrested Friday by members of the Middleborough Police Department on domestic abuse charges, then released on $2,000 bail. Subsequently arrested again following on similar domestic assault charges to MMAfighting.com. So, pretty great stuff. But the police officer said that in addition to the assault, Crispy also trained his pet pit bull to attack his wife, reporting that the victim had been, quote, chewed up. He's currently being treated at a local hospital for serious injuries. Police search of Grisby's home turned up a pot farm along with numerous weapons and ammunition. According to the Grisby's 3-year-old child was sitting next to a box of unsecured guns and ammunition when police arrived. Yeah.
Well, he's going to have quite a few years to consider the error of his ways, that's for sure. Wow. Talk about all the wrong things at once. Whew.
Get this, he pleaded innocent to 2 counts of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, 2 counts of violating a restraining order, animal cruelty, malicious damage to a motor vehicle, drug possession, to cultivate marijuana, and improper storage of a large capacity firearm, and rifle or shotgun near a child. Yeah, a child. Talk about a reversal of fortune. Did not imagine that kid would turn out that way. Crazy story. Anyway, we're still waiting on Antonio. Hopefully he will call in. Oh, we got the message. No, they know the number now. So, while we're waiting, we had a UFC fighter retired, Mark Bochek. So, posted a message on Twitter saying, thanks everyone. Coming off a split decision victory over Mike De La Torre at the Fighter Nations finale in April. He's been battling a lot of injuries that kept him out of the octagon for 17 months. Won 3 of his last 4 fights in the UFC. Nick Lentz, John Alessio, and De La Torre was his lone loss coming against Rafael Dos Anjos. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, started competing in MMA back in 2004, won his first 4 pro bouts, fighting in Canada before joining the UFC in 2007. And Bochek began his UFC career with a loss to Frankie Edgar at UFC 73. Bounced back to earn his first UFC victory with Doug Evans at UFC 79. So his overall career record in MMA of 12-5, 8-5 in the UFC, with 4 of his 5 losses to top 10 lightweights. 7 submission wins in his career, and also 2 Submission of the Night awards against Joe Bremer and Dustin Poirier. Big news if you're a Mainer. Tickets are still available for this card up in Bangor, Maine.
Thanks for
hanging up there. If you've read any Stephen King, you know a lot about Bangor, Maine. It's Dana's actual neck of the woods. He claims stomping grounds there for a little while.
Tim Sylvia is not going to be on the card. Is that true?
No. He and Dana are not on the same page either. There.
Boy, I wonder what the story is behind that.
Everything that I want to be a part of, the UFC is doing a super heavyweight division. They're doing this fight tonight, the home stage. They're not bringing me back, but I'll tell you, I saw Tim Sylvia against the strongman, Marius Michalski. And he looked pretty battered after that fight. It was pretty much just a wrestling match. He is a very big dude. You know, getting up there in age. So, I don't know how long a UFC career would last for him. If he's relying solely on getting back because they're coming up with a super heavyweight division, pissing him off, then I don't know. I don't know why they would want to bring him back, you know, at this stage.
Yeah, I think he's 38. I think he was born 1976, if I remember right. So he's 38. Or maybe just turned, 38. So that's, I guess, going to be a factor because, like you said, they don't sign anyone for a one-fight contract.
Right. And Bangor, Maine is really not a very smooth venue, usually. I guess ticket sales are not what I expected, but they're decent, said Dana White during the PR blitz. If we're anywhere else, I'd be ecstatic, but we only have 6,500 seats, and the thing isn't sold out yet. This is probably the first and only time we'll ever meet Bangor, Maine, so I was kind of expecting a quick sellout, and it didn't happen yet, so it's a little shocking. Uh, And nine-bout card is going to be headlined by a five-round battle of ranked light heavyweight contenders Ryan Darth Vader and Ovin St. Crow. Vader is 18-4. Ovin St. Crow is 16-5. Middleweights, Tim Doach, fighting against Brad Tavares, 12-3. Tavares goes to 17-7. So, did any of you guys put your boss to a table today?
I did not. My bosses were kind of cool with me today. Well, my one boss is out of the office, or not.
You know, it's DNA hurt your boss day. Put your boss to a table day, actually. August 7th. That's today. Put your boss to a table today. This is an actual event put on by TNA Impact Wrestling. It's declared today your boss through a table day. Why keep slamming your head against the table when you can put your boss through it instead? So between now and tonight's broadcast, which is starting very soon, 9/8 Central, the aggravated and oppressed are encouraged to check the social media policy section in employee handbook, then go online to share why their boss, past or present, deserves to be tossed through a table using the hashtag BossToss handle. Be creative using video or photos and be sure to tag at Impact Wrestling on Twitter and Impact Wrestling on Facebook and Instagram when publishing a post. Go put your boss through a table, guys. If you can find him. A lot of bosses hiding today.
Well, all the ones I work for are about at least 1,000 miles away from me, so it'll be kind of hard for me. One of those longest.
I bought $240 bucks last week, so I'm not throwing him to any tables. Anyway. Still waiting on Antonio. Yes, I got to give a shout out to his publicist again. Oh boy, Manny Pacquiao is bought into ONE Fighting Championship. You guys heard about this?
Yeah.
So he's making a major push. Major push into mixed martial arts. A lot of people look at Bellator or World Series of Fighting as the second tier organization, but mixed martial arts and martial arts are really more based over in the area where ONE FC is really starting to get powerful. In the Asian countries, and I think it's going to spread like wildfire, and if they ever get a hold of the United States, that'll be your number two organization in the world. Just a matter of time. So we'll see. But Manny Pacquiao, we don't know how many shares he bought, but he bought a substantial stake, according to this one article, of ONE Fighting Championship. So what do we got for boxing coming up this weekend, Tony?
Questions now. Well, we got Danny Garcia. This fight was to be a title fight. It's no longer a title fight. He's fighting a gentleman by the name of Rob Salka, who's been a lightweight pretty much his whole career, stepping up to fight Garcia. Relative to the English record, Garcia is undefeated champion. Coming off his little bit less of stuff with Mauricio Herrera. And Angel, Danny's father, is pissed because the criticism was out there stating Danny's cherry picking his opponent, and it's an easy opponent, and it's not much of a challenge. Angel's fired up. Angel's sitting there saying, you know, that's Danny doesn't cherry pick nobody. It's hard because when he took a fight against Souther, Danny was coming off a pretty impressive string of hard fights. So it was one of those ones you say, okay, when he's playing Herrera, I should say, he was coming off a string of a lot of tough fights out there. You know, we had to fight, we had two fights with Eric Morales, the decision and the knockout win over Morales. He had the stunning knockout of Amir Khan a few years ago. He had a tough fight with Zab Judah in there. And then he had an impressive performance against the feared Argentine fighter, Lucas Matisse. So now it's like, okay, let's give him you know, kind of like a lower status fight, maybe a tune-up fight, maybe get him ready for Floyd Mayweather. They never told me whether we had a tough time with everybody's name tonight, Jesus Christ. The other Argentine fighter. So you know, they put him in his rare, and a lot of people thought Danny lost that fight. So now it's like, oh shit, now where do we go? Well, let's build up a little bit. We're fighting against this guy Rob Saka. Not highly regarded, so we'll see how that pans out. So the sanctioning bodies won't even sanction this fight, and I know Angel's thinking of, you know, bullshit and all that, but you got to give the sanctioning bodies credit here. It's not just running out and grabbing the money. They're sanctioning this fight, so you get extra money out of it. They're sticking to their belief that the guy was not deserving of a title shot.
All righty, well, that's their story in this case, too, I guess. Nevada State Athletic Commission is also concerned with Chael Sonnen's activity since he's going to be competing here in this Metamoris 4 event against Andre Galvo. They're saying already this is going to violate his 2-year suspension. Even though they don't sanction this event, which is kind of odd, but...
Yeah, that really seems like a stretch to me.
You really don't like this guy.
Yeah, they sure don't.
Hey, no, that's what Chael says. but Sonnen's pretty pissed off. You know, he says this doesn't violate his suspension. But they're threatening to take administrative action against him, now, even though now he's retired from MMA. They said they could have hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines against him. So they apparently sent him a letter this past week informing him that the grappling match violated the terms of his suspension, which was handed down in July after a disciplinary hearing on multiple failed drug tests for UFC 175. So Sonnen's legal rep sent the response to challenge the State Athletic Commission's definition of competing. At the time of this writing, it appears Sonnen will meet Galvo as scheduled. In a previous statement, Metamoris President Raelic Gracie expressed support for Sonnen despite his commission rules. This Saturday in Los Angeles, streaming via online. So... Sonnen goes through with it. He's got a lot on the line, I guess. The Nevada State Athletic Commission won't be happy. So. American gangster living up to his name. Jose Aldo making some waves. He says he's not concerned if his opponents are using performance-enhancing drugs. No concern whatsoever. No big deal.
That was very interesting. I found his comments fascinating on that topic. But he's definitely in the minority. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. He says, I see no problem with TRT usage. A lot of people use something and hide. Then they criticize people who admittedly use. I think these are a bunch of pussies trying to find an excuse, fearing to lose fights against who's doing a good job. At one point, you have an age that makes it necessary. I see no problem with TRT. I would fight who is doing TRT, who isn't, or who is using other drugs. It doesn't matter to me anyway. The same punch I'll throw in one of these guys, I'll throw in another of them. If it's allowed or not, I don't care because I'll still train and fight as I'm doing right now. So a little bit of bravado on Alvin's part there. Does not care what you're on. He's an equal opportunity puncher.
Yeah. that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, to say the least. So, waiting on Antonio again. Hopefully he'll be calling in any minute. But he's had a pretty interesting career. Looking back at some of his fights, he's actually done a three-fight unbeaten streak. He had one no contest in the middle of that. And Latif KO'd back in 2012. He had back-to-back losses to Chad Dawson 2008 and 2009. And he was on a three-fight win streak for that one. He has some guys, Kenton Wood, Danny Santiago, Aldo Marici. And I ran into a little freight train named Bernard Hopkins back in 2006 when Hopkins was 46-4-1. Had a couple big wins. Came back after a loss to Glenn Johnson, beat Glenn Johnson back in 2005. Beat Roy Jones Jr. in October of 2005, on my birthday, October 1st, 2005. Beat Roy Jones Jr. Glenn Johnson. And Roy Jones Jr., he had another win over him back in 2004, May 15th, 2004, that was their second fight. And first fight, he lost a majority decision. 2003. Pretty cool stuff. Also fought Montel Griffin, beat him by unanimous decision. Had multiple title belts. His first title opportunity was against Reggie Johnson for the NABF light heavyweight title and the USBA light heavyweight title back in 2002. Won that fight by split decision. So he's only lost to really big names, and now he's campaigning at heavyweight. Looking forward to getting them to connect tonight. See what's going on. Got any plans or not? Teasing Tony 2 weeks in a row here.
I know, it's horrible.
Kitchen. Well, I know we got to have a UFC event coming up soon. I mentioned the Bangor event. We got a fight night coming up, don't we, Tom?
August 13th, I believe that's the Ryan Bader. Ryan Bader's on the main event on that one. And he'll need a win for sure.
All right. August 13th, so that's the day before our next show. What happens there?
Oh, and then, you know, Rich, we were talking about upsets. And one that, and I was trying to find it on YouTube, and it's not on there for some reason, but it goes back to 1997, back in the early days. for the UFC. And that's when Mark Coleman had come along, and he was just steamrolling through everyone. And then he fought a kickboxer named Maurice Smith. Now, have you ever seen that fight?
I've heard of Maurice Smith. I've seen Maurice Smith before.
Well, it was pretty much preordained that Coleman was just going to walk right through him, and he did get him down in the first 30 seconds, and everyone thought it was going to be over, but Coleman had apparently trained for about a two-minute fight, and Smith was working with Frank Shamrock then. They kind of made an agreement that he'd help Frank with the stand-up, and Frank would help him on the ground. And after about 5 minutes, Coleman would take him down, but Smith could survive. And then after 5-6 minutes, Coleman started to get tired, and then the fight really picked up. But it was just, I mean, no one gave Smith much of a chance at all in that fight. And it was one of the most exciting, dramatic fights I've ever seen. And it's not on YouTube for some reason. So I don't know if there's some licensing issues from, what was it then, SEG Sports before Zuffa bought them. But yeah, I'd have to say that one would be right up there.
Yeah.
If I could ever find that. I mean, I have it on my old VHS collection. I still haven't got that figured out how to get that onto DVD. It's embarrassing to admit, but if I ever do that, I'll have to send you that, and you can check it out.
Yeah, that's a dilemma nowadays. They don't really have an easy converter for that kind of stuff. They should. I know I got a whole couple bookcases full of old VHS tapes. I have Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson on VHS somewhere.
Actually, I just bought one. I just bought one a couple weeks ago. I haven't set it up yet. I have downstairs in my one rec room, I had bought, it was a VHS player, it was a DVD player, but could also convert back and forth. I never converted from a DVD to a VHS, because why the hell would I do that? but I did take some of my old VHSs, and I was putting them on DVDs. I was taking like some of my old fights, some of the ones you guys see on YouTube, how to play with Jordan and all those guys. Those were from VHS tapes. They were from the media of the 90s. So with that was an actual physical converter. You can actually play the VHS tape. You can watch it while you're dubbing it. The one I just bought, I don't know if... Now, the one thing I was running into, like, this is the DVD players you can get like a minus R or a plus R, and then minus RW or plus RW. And I don't know which one I have, but whichever one I have is the shittier one. What that means is, like, you can only maximum get 2-hour DVDs in it. So say you had a movie that was 2.5 hours long, well, you're SOL. The other one, you can, which I think is the minus R, you can get up to 4-hour DVDs to dub on. But what when they put you there, say you got, like, a minus R, and you have a 2-hour video, you would do one standard recording. So when you put it into your DVD player, it would be a straight 2-hour video, or however long it was. When you get the RWs, what I said on there, that you can break it up. So it's like you can break it up every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes, and you can do like multiple videos on one. Like if I was doing like 3 or 4 of my fights, I could do them all in a row on one DVD, and then each one having a different file, which is a little bit of an advantage. Now, with this item I just got about a month ago, which I haven't taken out of the box yet, I'm looking at it now. It's called a Home Tech VHS DVD 7.0 Deluxe Easy Wizard Mode. I guess this might be something you might even be able to do through your computer. I don't know how yet. I will figure it out. But it says up here, like, analog videos, HD editing, Blu-rays, audio recorders, all good stuff like that where you can put these VHSs, and I think it's just even more simply converting the DVDs. Technicians, technology from the tornado. That's what we'll call the segment.
Okay. I want you to keep us in the loop here. Keep us posted.
Okay, we got a hold of the publicist, so Tony will probably be calling. On now. There he is. All one.
Hello.
Hello, Antonio.
Hey, what's going on, brother? Man, my apologies, man. I've been so busy. I'm fucking trying to get ready for training camp. I just left the gym, but we're all set. Let's do it.
All right. Wow. Good to finally get in touch with you and get this going. So we got plenty of time. Welcome to the show. Good having you on. Right off the bat, what do you got going on these days, and what are you working on?
Okay, that's what's up. Well, you know, we fight September 19th in San Antonio. We got a top 10 fighter. We're fighting a heavyweight, Jonathan Banks of the Crunk Boxing Gym in Detroit. You know, he's a nephew of the famous late great Emmanuel Stewart. You know, he's now the head trainer for Vladimir Klitschko. So, I mean, it's going to be an intriguing fight with me coming off this long layoff and a lot of activity over the last 3 years. Is going to, you know, this is the type of fight that can answer a lot of questions. You know, do I have what it takes to be a top-notch heavyweight, and can I really make a run at the heavyweight title? I mean, a lot of that will be answered September 19th in San Antonio.
Hey, Antonio, I've been the driving force of the show. I'm the co-host. Hey, Rich, thanks for introducing your co-host tonight, by the way.
Sorry about that.
on behalf of the other co-host and myself, I'm the Tornado, Tony, Penny Cal. We also have Psychic Tom Padgett on the phone. We are the two co-hosts. Don't let Rich hog everything up. But, Antonio,
good evening,
I've been
Antonio.
The driving force on here for a couple years.
Oh, man, I got about three or four guys on the line at the same time, huh?
Yeah, we're like a triple threat.
All right. I can dig it.
I've been trying a couple years. I wanted to get you on the show here just because I always thought you'd be a great interviewer, and I followed your career from the amateur days from the Olympics. I always said if I ever got Antonio on the show, I always had one question that I wanted to start off with. And that was Antonio. You got any excuses tonight?
You know, I don't never have no excuses, brother. It is what it is.
Well, Antonio,
that question will live forever. Yeah, that question will live on forever, Antonio. Best I think I ever heard. Every time I see it, I start laughing. I can't help it.
Oh yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, Antonio, this is part of the reason I wanted to get you on. Obviously, you know, we've never had the chance to meet, but we are actually linked in three different ways, three completely separate ways, and you're going to get laughed at this. I'm from Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I know you started part of your pro career in Philadelphia.
Yep.
One of the nights that you were boxing at the Blue Horizon, my college boxing coach came down to see you fight there. I went to Caden University. The college boxing coach there was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Ken Cox. And I don't know if you remember
Ken.
Dr. Cox.
Of
yeah,
course,
he was the team manager of your Olympic team in 96.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember Mr. Cox, man.
Yeah, and I still see Doc so often. I try to get up to Lock Haven about once a year, help out with the team a little bit, go to their annual show, and he's still doing okay. He's slowing down. He doesn't coach the team anymore, but he's doing okay, 81 years old.
Oh, that's
and,
you hear from him, you let him know how to say hello.
I will actually email him tonight. He's one of the most unique guys out there, a funny guy. a lot of the things that in my life I owe to him. Well, one of the first nights you were fighting at the Blue, there was a gentleman fighting on the card. I think he was fighting the walkout fight. He was one of the Fletcher brothers. They had the great middleweights of the 80s, Frank Fletcher, Anthony Two Guns Fletcher, was a younger brother, Troy. And my dad was helping in his corner that night, and he always said, Antonio Tarver was one of the nicest guys. We were sharing the locker room together that night, and he always said, how nice you are. I mean, that's like, when I told him we were going to interview, he goes, ask him if he remembers me. He probably wants to know how I'm doing.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's great, man.
Yeah, he was in.
Those are the days.
You know, and the thing is, unfortunately, I never got to come see you fight at the Blue, because that's when you were fighting down there, I was just finishing up, and the one time, because our season had just ended, and Doc was going down to see you guys fight, and he's like, Pennacow, I know you'd love to come down with me and go to the fight, but you got finals, and you got to finish your finals, because if you don't graduate, well, God knows what we're going to do with you.
Right.
You'll be here forever.
Yeah, that's it.
And the third thing, that, and I know you'll get a kick out of this, also, as many of our listeners know, you've also spent some time on the silver screen.
Right. A little bit of time.
I was an extra in that movie. Your boy Sly cut me out of that movie.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. In fact, I almost got fired because of that movie twice for my regular job. Because I wanted to go to the audition so bad, and I'm on vacation a couple days. When you guys were filming out in Vegas for the fight scenes, that
right.
was the day we were having the Philadelphia auditions. Well, I'm on vacation a couple days before that. My appendix ruptures. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, Dad, you know, I want to go to this audition. You've got to drive me. He's like, they're not even going to release you from the hospital. I said, don't worry. I'll talk him into it. So I talked him into letting me out of the hospital. He drives me to the audition, so I'm standing there, and I'm with the guy that I had boxed in the amateurs, the guy that ended up being at Philadelphia Golden Glove, I think, runner up. And we're hanging there, and he's like, dude, are you okay? I'm like, no, man, I had my appendix out 2 days ago. He's like, I'll hang with you. I'll make sure you're all right. So we go in there, and I'm thinking, I'm an Italian kid from Philadelphia. I box. I'm natural for this. Maybe they'll put me in the gym and, you know, beat on some bags or something in the background. The woman looks at me from the casting, and she goes, I think you can read for a part. I'm like, really? Okay, I'm not an actor, but sure, I'll read for a part. Well, the scene near the beginning when the guy was trying to hustle him for drinks in the bar, and then he has to jack him up, that's what I read for. But I didn't get it. I wasn't big enough. They wanted like a bigger, heavier, bulkier guy than me. So I go to the audition. I obviously, it's on a weekend. Well, who does the Philadelphia Inquirer want to interview? Me. Who does my boss see in the article? Me. And they're like, we thought you were out with surgery. And now they're accusing me of faking it. I'm like, you want to see the scar? So I don't get that part. I'm down as an extra for the Italian market a few days and had a lot of fun. Well, the last day when they're having all the people run up the steps, I said, I'm going to that. So I show up at work, and I'm like, I got to leave. I said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to an Army team, a film. They said, we got the meeting with the CEO today. I said, the CEO don't give two shits if I'm there or not. So I cut out. I go there. Who does the local Philadelphia camera stop on when they're panning through the crowd? Me. I'm driving home. And my dad's like, you go to work today? I'm like, yeah, Dad. Went to work. He's like, all day? I said, well, I was there in the morning. I was there in the afternoon. He said, where were you in the middle of the day? I said, why do you ask? He goes, you were at the Art Museum, weren't you? I'm like, why do you ask that? He goes, because I saw you on the news. I'm like, oh, shit. I went into work on Monday, like, yeah, we all saw you on the news. I'm like, oh, God.
Wow.
So we're co-stars. They cut me out, Antonio, but we are still co-stars.
Yeah,
and if you look at that final scene with all the people running and they do the big rip shot and you see a really defined left arm in there, you know it's me.
Yeah, hey, they couldn't keep you out, huh? You was going to get in one way or another. Huh?
That's right. You
Antonio,
well,
how did you first get into boxing in the first place? Tell us that story.
Yeah, man, I was you know, I was one of those little roughnecks coming up, you know what I'm saying, and I just couldn't keep out of trouble, you know what I mean? And fortunately, I had a really good director at the local Boys and Girls Club. His name is Lester Sears, who really, really saw something in me, you know, with all that energy and that aggression as a kid. You know, I picked up boxing at a young age, about 10 or 11 years old. But fighting just always came natural to me, man. I just always had a heart for that. And, you know, I was tough coming up. So, you know, one thing led to another, and I put the skill behind it, you know, through my J.O., you know, Junior Olympics and all. And, you know, I love the competition of all. And, you know, I mean, you know, whenever I could kick somebody's ass without going to jail, you know, that was always a good thing, yeah. You know what I mean? I felt good about boxing. Winning the trophies, and then just the camaraderie of the guys when I was young, man, I really leaned toward those because I didn't have any brothers, you know. I was amongst three girls that was up in my family with a single mom. So I got out. That was my escape box, you know what I mean, just to be with, you know, guys like myself and fierce, you know, of boxing. So I really enjoyed it at a young age, and I think it really deterred me from going down that wrong path as a youngster. I mean, I had something to fall back on, and it was boxing.
Yeah. Hey, Anthony, I was going to ask you, and I ask any time I ever speak to anybody that competed in the Olympics, especially, and actually we had your you know, rival Roy Jones on a couple of years ago, and I cracked his book to Roy. I said, Roy, if you would have just knocked the Korean out, we never would have screwed the scoring up. Your fight, a lot of people think that scoring really cost you a chance at the gold medal. What did you think of the Olympic scoring, and what do you think about them changing the back?
Well, I mean, the scoring, they never really could get it right. You know what I mean? It just was too many, you know, it's too many errors in that thing. You having to punch at the same time simultaneously with two or three other judges. It's inaccurate. You cannot have a fair story like that. And, you know, I'm not going to cry over spilled milk, but I beat the shit out of a silly Giraffe. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
You know, but when, you know, the bottom line is I hit him way more times than he hit me. And, you know, I counterpunched a lot. And, you know, when your whole career and your gold medal dream is flashing in front of your face and you feel like, you know, there's been some type of injustice, because in that second round, I mean, come on, man, I did all of the work in that second round, and to go back and to realize that I was 3 points down, it affected
right.
me in the last, you know what I mean? I'm like, God damn, I panicked, you know what I'm saying? And I got outside
yeah.
of my boxing, outside of what I normally do, because I felt like my whole world was slipping away from me. And, you know, they gave him the decision. But, you know, like I said, I mean, I think I won when you look at how our professional careers have paralleled. I think it showed who was the
right.
best fighter. So, I mean, I think he probably retired 5, 6, 7 years ago. Not because, you know, because he couldn't do it anymore. He wasn't at the top of his game. You know, I'm here to prove
right.
that at 45, ain't nobody should take me for granted when I step in that ring, because I still can do it, and that's the bottom line. My skills haven't eroded like a lot of these older fighters out here. You know, I think they're perpetrating a fraud, but you can tell when they fight, their skills haven't eroded. My skills haven't eroded. All I got to do is get in great shape, and they're going to see a monster. They've already created the monster because I've been training 6, 7 months. I'm ready for whatever. And this particular training camp is going to take me to San Antonio and beyond, because I'm not going to get out of the gym until it's over. I'm focused. My son is looking at my every move, so I got to do everything right. And I'm showing him how it's done. And so I'm giving him the blueprint. And, you know, he's coming up. I'm in the twilight of my career, but my son's about to take on a whole new journey. And so get used to Tarver. That name is going to be synonymous in boxing for years to come. And I'm telling you, I'm not saying this just because he's my son, but he's a splitting image of me, and I'm talking about every aspect. He just don't have the mouth. He don't have the gift of gab. He wasn't blessed with the gift of gab, but, boy, do he have them hands. He got them hands, and that's point blank period. And I'm going to promote him, and I'm going to manage him, and I'm going to show you how you make a world champion from clay. from clay.
I saw on Twitter how you called
him out
for I saw how on Twitter you called him out for using champ in his handle. So, no, you haven't earned that yet, son.
He hasn't earned it. And so that's what I tell him. You can't be called no champ. You ain't number one, nothing. But I say he'll appreciate it when he do. So that's what it's all about. This is a tough sport, man. I'm gearing him up for that. But he is committed. He's dedicated, and he wanted for himself, not for me, but for himself. So, and that's why I didn't force him to box when he was 10, 11, 12 years old. I didn't force him to go to the gym. I didn't make him box. He chose boxing, and it's my responsibility as a father to give him everything I got. And I wish like hell I would have knew he had the gift years ago. Maybe, you know, he would be champion right now rather than, you know, starting his career. But God don't make any mistakes. I started my professional career at 27. They told me I was too old to start. They told me I'd never amount to nothing. And we 5 championships later, looking at 6, and finna rejuvenate the heavyweight division. And you can say all you want about these big guys, 6'5", 6'6". Man, come on, I forgot more about boxing than these guys can ever learn. And if any one of them big clowns take me to break, I'm going to show you how he chopped down a tree right before he died. Trust me. So clown hit by me. And, you know, that's just point blank period, man. I'm still here. And I'm going to show the world how to recreate the magic. Because, you know, I feel like I still got it. I haven't taken no abuse in boxing. You ain't never seen me stroll around the ring, off balance, equilibrium gone. You ain't never seen nobody hit me with no clean shot. And I fall face first on the mat. You ain't seen that. So until you see that, I'm still here.
And the one thing I want to say, I mean, like, so you have gone out there and fought some of the biggest names out there. You've beaten some of the biggest names out there. And for, as you just said, for someone they said was too old to start a pro career, I mean, in my opinion, and I follow boxing, and I've followed boxing since I was a little guy, I think Hall of Fame. I mean, and I know it's something, you know, it's not on your mind right now because you're still gunning for the biggest prize in the game. But I think, I mean, even if that doesn't come to fruition, you know, and say you just retired tomorrow and you said, you know what, it's time for the Magic Man to step down, I still think the body of work warrants, you know, consideration in Canada.
I mean, man, my thoughts on that is my work isn't done yet, but I don't know any 5-time champion walking around that's not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, come on, not in the Hall of Fame. I did my work, but I'm not saying I'm a Hall of Fame worthy. I'm saying when it's all said and done, it won't be no question.
All right. Now, the one question I was going to ask you, 10 years ago, back in May of 2004, when you landed that counter left hand, can you take us what was going through your mind when that shot landed on Roy Jones' chin?
This motherfucker better not get up. That was it. That was my best shot. If he'd have got up from that, well, I ain't no telling what would have happened. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, classic.
And the other question I was going to ask, you beat Roy 2 out of 3. The first fight, very close, very controversial decision that Roy ended up walking away with. Second fight, you knocked him out. The third fight, you handled him, pretty much over the 12 rounds. You staggered him pretty good, won a decision. You beat him 2 out of 3. What is your personal relationship now with Roy Jones? Is there still any coldness towards him? Is there still any animosity, or have you guys patched that up?
I mean, you know what? To be honest, man, it was always business with me. I just felt like, shit, I had to do what I had to do to get my shot. You know what I mean? I mean, if I would have closed mouth, don't get fed. If I would have stayed, if I would have just not did what I did, I would have never had that opportunity, man. They was trying to get around me. You know what I'm saying? They was trying to get around me. So I couldn't let it happen, man. I guess I had to do because I was confident that I knew I had the best shot to beat him, you know what I mean, because of my skill. So, you know, I mean, I don't regret anything, but I know I had to go hard. And that day when I went there and I touched that microphone, he won the heavyweight title, man. I think that was the the first time everybody really took notice. I mean, but you know what, God, I look at it, if he would have fought, he would have fought me when I was a man. I don't think I was ready to beat him. You know, I lost to Eric Hardy. That was a little swallow. I came back and I beat Eric Hardy. That true motivation that I needed to say, I can compete with anybody in this weight class, and I might be the best light heavyweight in the world. Because Roy Jones really, he didn't really dominate Eric Hardy. He didn't knock Eric Hardy out. Eric Hardy gave him fits before he tore his body. And Eric Hardy was one of the toughest guys I've ever faced. I mean, even when I knocked him, he was a puzzle, a tough puzzle to solve. And if he wouldn't have gotten over-aggressive, I don't know if I would have been able to land that counter left hand. I mean, his trainer sent him at me to knock me out. I flipped the table on him and ended up catching a great shot. But, you know, like I said, God don't make no mistake. Not Eric Hardy. I knew I was ready for Roy.
I remember the rematch, Derek Harding. I think it might have been on HBO. I'm not sure. I think it was, but I remember him. He had won the first few rounds, and then I remember him stepping up. And I remember the shot that hit him, and it was like, this it's over. You know, he got up, but it was over from that punch.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I look back, and you can go check that tape out. And you'll see and listen to his great, Alvin or something. He sent him at me. He said, go get it, Eric. Go knock him out. Go get him. He's ready to go. And Eric got over-aggressive, and it gave me a shot, you know, to get him out of there. But, shit, he was handing it to me the first three rounds. And, you know, I take my hand off to him. He was one of the toughest fighters. And I think after, the 12 rounds he beat me the first time, I mean, he probably, outside of that one round, I can say he got the best of me. You know, he was one guy that, you know, just made it tough from a southpaw stand. And, you know, it was a tough match. But I took the unnecessary risk to position myself to fight Roy Jones, because after that, he couldn't really run anywhere. I had proven myself.
Antonio, what do you love most about boxing?
You know what? In one night, the whole face of boxing can change. I mean, you're never really out of the game if you're in it, you know, and you got to – but there's no shortcuts, man, in boxing. You got to do the work in order to get the results. I mean, I love the game because I'm hungry, man, and I never thought at 45 I can feel this type of hunger and passion for the sport I love. But like I said, I think that suspension and I think taking so long to get back has really fueled my fire, and it really asked myself, do I really want this? And I ask myself that every day. And when I wake up, I meditate, I say my prayer, I say, yeah, I want this more than anything, man. I want to become heavyweight champion. And I'm looking at Vladimir Klitschko, man. I'm looking at the best heavyweights out there, and I got a shot. I got a real shot to become heavyweight champion and break George Foreman record. And, I mean, hey, people don't see it now. They probably won't see it until it happens. But I'm here to tell you, just like I told you, I was going to knock Roy Jones out. I got a real shot at becoming champion. That I don't mean I can beat all these guys on any, you know, all these guys straight in a row. But I know that on any given night, I can prepare to beat any man in the heavyweight division. And first, starting with Jonathan Banks, who I think is a very, very tough fighter when he's motivated. And whether he's motivated or not, I got to be ready to do and take care of my team on September 19th.
Do you have any favorite fighters of all time and present day coming
out? Oh, yeah, man. I've always loved the greats. You know, Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, that era of great fighters. Of course, Marvin Hagler is my all-time favorite. He's my idol. I mean, we got the same, you know, poison. You know, those three knocks against us, how he would say it, you know, he never got the respect deserved because he was southpaw, he could fight, and he was black, you know what I mean? And he's bald-headed, so we got a whole lot in common.
And he was good.
I trained with Petronelli Jim in Brockton, Massachusetts with Goody Petronelli. His nephew, actually, Tony Petronelli, was my trainer for a little while. I didn't really have any official fights, but I had some sparring. I tried to get back into it myself as an amateur fighter. And Petronelli's gym was on its last legs those days. That's one of the places where Marvin first learned to box, so it was kind of ominous that he came to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I get to meet him. I get to meet him every time I go to Canastota, man, for the Hall of Fame. I've been up there twice, and that's my biggest moment when I get a chance to rub elbows with the great Marvin Hagler, man. He's a beautiful man, and, man, you know, when I look at his career, it just shows me what hard work is all about. And whether you get the love of the fans or not, you know, you got to go in there and do your work, man. And the purists, the real fans, will appreciate it in the end.
YouTube video out there of Goody Petronelli running the beaches of Provincetown, Massachusetts with Marvin Hagler. And it's like a 12-minute video all about his never fight at all. And not only are they running the beach, but Marvin's working combat.
Is that on YouTube?
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Okay. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, it's probably under Goody Petronelli. It'd be easier to find than anything. But Goody was a great guy. He just died not too long ago, a couple of years ago. I had the good fortune of meeting him right before he died. And getting a lot of good stories out of him about training Marvin and all that. The first day he came in as a 16-year-old kid. And it was just one of those stories where, you know, he got popped in the mouth. He didn't do all that great the first time, but the key was he showed up the next day. He wanted to fight the same kid and prove himself right off the bat in a new area. And he did. And he just took over the world not too long after that. One of my favorite fighters growing up, just because he was from around here. I grew up in Massachusetts. One of my all-time favorites. This guy never lost money on his bet, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Ray Leonard. Marvin's still pissed about
close
that.
Close fight, man. There's still a lot of controversy over that Leonard fight, though.
Right.
You know what? Actually, I really enjoyed seeing a couple years ago. I became pretty good friends, especially just chatting a lot with them on boxing chat rooms and Facebook and everything, is Iceman John Scully, who is turned into a pretty good trainer now. He's a former world title challenger. And he said a couple of years ago he was at a fight card at a casino, and he bumped into Angelo Dundee, and then he bumped into Goody Petronelli, and he got them together for a photo. And that was the first time they had seen each other since working against each other in a Leonard Hagler fight. And then they both died within like 3 days of each other. And Iceman, he shared that photo of them together. The first time they saw each other since that fight, and then they happened to die within three days of each other. How just amazing that was.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Anthony, the other question I was going to ask you, we were talking earlier about, you know, your role, Rocky Balboa. First of all, have they contacted you about the upcoming Rocky spinoff about Apollo's grandson, about taking on Mason and Lion Dixon? Has that been discussed with you?
I mean, no, man. I don't know what Sly doing, man. I mean, I thought we did a hell of a job on that whole movie thing, man. It was my first time out there, and I felt like I did, you know, what was expected of me. I don't know, man. I mean, in the end, you know, Sly and I kind of had our differences. But, you know, I respect him, man, and I mean, I'm gracious for the opportunity of a lifetime. And I would love to, you know, work even on the fight scene or just come in, just as, you know, somebody that has been through all that and to help out in any way I can. But I haven't gotten a phone call, man, and it's unfortunate, but, Let me go on record saying this. Considering I pretty much directed the entire fight scene for Rocky Balboa. I personally directed the fight scene, and everybody on that set can tell you that. Sly Stallone came with the same thing he had in 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, same route, you know, same basic one step, and I changed the whole fight scene, and we had a real fight unfold right before everybody's eyes. You know, I didn't get director's credit for that. You know, but you can ask Sly himself. He ripped up his boxing scene, and he trusted me with the fight scene in that movie. And I did my job, I think. And, you know, why he, I don't know why he didn't, you know, appreciate what I brought to the table. But I felt like this, if it was going to be another Rocky movie, he was going to have me somewhere in there. You know what I mean? Considering everything I brought to the table. But, you know, sometimes people just don't think like that.
Right. And you know what? It was funny. Some of the that when I went to see it, the first time I saw it, you know, I was more nervous about trying to see myself than anything. And then when I was disappointed at the end, it was hard for me to appreciate it. So I had to go back and then, you know, rewatch it, you know, knowing my personal disappointment in there. And I'll tell you some of my actual favorite scenes. The one criticism I had from the way they put that one together, and I know they were portraying it as Rocky being older, but they portrayed it like he was really taking it seriously, but everybody else was taking it so much as a joke that it made your character look almost like you were going to take it easy on him. Like the scene at the weigh-in, you're like, hey, I'll protect you out there. Don't worry about it. But if you do anything, I'll take you out. And that's when he gives I came here to win. And it's like, well, in my mind, he was going there. You weren't afraid for the main character. When you went, I mean, he was fighting the guys like Drago and all that. Okay, you know what's going to happen. You know that Rocky's going to somehow come out on top, win or lose. But at the end, but you were still fearing for his character because Drago was so deadly, or even in the street fight in Rocky V, that he had brain damage, and you were fearing for him because these guys are trying to kill him. The criticism I had on this one is that your character basically tells him before the fight, I'm going to carry you unless you try to do something to me. So that was my I didn't go into that last fight with the fear that, oh, my God, this guy's trying to take Rocky's head off. But the other, you know, criticism I had was your character, they kind of made you look disinterested. I'm just doing through the motions here. I'm not taking this serious. But on the other hand, I thought the best scene of the whole movie, and this is the one that I still talk about, was your scene back when you went to see your old trainer.
Yeah, that was a good scene, man. I mean, but on the fight scene, it was basically, we're going to do this exhibition, whatever. But, you know, it was going to be, I was going to, you know, not even try to carry him, but my job was to go in there. I'm camp, and if he disrespect me by doing something crazy, trying to challenge me or whatever, then we were going to be in a fight. And then, you know, it kind of ended up like that, you know, because he dug a couple body shots. And then when I hurt my hand in the round, he tried to take advantage of it, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I had to really fight back. I had to, you know, it was a close fight, but I had to fight back, and I pulled it out. But, you know, that's what it was. But it was cool, man. Like I said, it was a hell of an experience. I never thought a dream in a million years I'll get that call. So, you know, I mean, God got a way of working things out, man. I've always wanted to eat and do movies, but I didn't know how I was going to get my break, but Sly reached out to me, man, and the rest is history. I'm glad that he did. I'm forever grateful. But, you know, like I said, I think the whole situation, we kind of ended on a bitter note, you know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, you know, like I said, if I could mend that relationship, I would. But, you know, I mean, I've reached out to him a couple times, even to his agent. But, you know, sometimes people are just, you know, they hold grudges or whatever. You know, they take things personal sometimes.
Now, I'm the whole
thing
on the expendable.
Say it again?
No, I'm going to hold a spot for you on the Expendables 4.
Oh, okay. They got my
Victor
man in there now.
Victor was in
Ortiz,
number 3.
Yeah, he got Victor Ortiz in that one, don't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, in part 3 he does.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anyway, Antonio, what's your ultimate goal with boxing and all this? I know you've done some color commentary too, right? What's perfect?
Well, you know, you know, I really miss being behind that mic, man. But I got big plans for the future in boxing, man. Like I said, I'm promoting, managing my son, and I'm gonna show these people how to make a champion from clay. And you know, I want to build my brand and build my company, man, to, you know, where I'm one of the premier promotional outfits in the business. And I think I have the wherewithal to do that. I have the experience. I know the boxing game inside and out. And I mean, I'm gonna be a big time exec in boxing and in the sport of boxing for years to come. So that's what I'm positioning myself for. But first things first, I got my own personal goals. Like I said, I got my own personal goals. I mean, those heavyweight titles, we got one that's vacant. I mean, it's available. You got Stefan holding that one. He's fighting Wilder. They're going to knock each other off. Only one of them will be standing after they fight. So who knows, man? I could be closer to this heavyweight title than a lot of people think. In 2015, I'm going to make, you know, once I'm successful against Jonathan Banks, I think 2015, right after shoot, you're going to see me facing one of the top premier heavyweights in the game.
Well, you're gonna be in good company. There's a lot of people in the mix right now trying to come up, like you just mentioned, there's a few of them. What do you think about Shannon Briggs? You know, he's coming off this big Twitter and Facebook video of him eating Vladimir's food right off his plate, literally. What do you think of his tactics trying to get the shot at the belt?
Man, hey, you know what? It's whatever you got to do, man. I mean, hey, that's a big opportunity for Shannon Briggs. It's a big opportunity for anybody to face Vladimir Klitschko and have an opportunity to become the unified heavyweight champion. So, I mean, that's something worth going all out for. And I commend Shannon Briggs. You know, I don't know if he have what it takes to beat him, but I commend him for what he's doing. He's trying to get a shot at one more opportunity. I mean, you can't knock the guy, and I really hate people that try to knock guys that are trying to find and get an opportunity and maybe become, you know, and get an opportunity to become something great. Why would you fault a man for trying to do that? I don't understand. I mean, that's what we're here for. We're here to try to make opportunities for ourselves. Ain't nobody else going to just call us and say, hey, I'm going to give you all this money if you want, you know. No, you got to do out-of-the-box things to get attention, and for desperate things call for desperate measures. Shit, I mean, if Shannon Briggs had a chance to fight Vladimir Klitschko, that could be a resurgence in his career, also in his brand. I mean, it's life after, and that fight will get him that fight against Shannon Briggs and Vladimir Klitschko, that fight will get Shannon Briggs some money. So let that man do what he's supposed to do to get what he got to get, because we all out here trying to get the same thing. We all out here trying to do the same thing. You are doing the same. Everybody out here in America trying to do the same thing. Get the money, take care of their family. I don't fault nobody for doing that.
And you said you're going to a guy when he's eating and taking the food off his plate. I mean, that's a new definition of being hungry. He's showing me hungry.
I'm
taking
food
out of your
place.
I am hungry.
Yeah,
but my personal view on that, though, is I think the whole thing was staged, because ain't no fucking way Shannon Briggs going to let any – I mean, I ain't going to let nobody pull no ward on my head and I don't get to him. This motherfucker threw all the food off the table. That was unnecessary. You didn't really have to do that if you want to really go at somebody. You just go at him. He can't clear his place. He's got all the fucking, you know, I think the whole thing was staged. I think Vladimir Klitschko probably did.
I think part of it definitely planned, like on Britain's. I think that it just.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm having a hard, who's ever talking now, I'm having a hard time hearing him. And, hey, we got 5 more minutes on this, man. We've been on the phone for a minute. Let's wrap this up. I got to eat. I got to do things. So let's wrap it up. 5 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah, I got some kind of wind interference going on, I think. But one of the last
I'm having a hard time hearing the one guy.
How do people find you online? Say you're on Twitter. Can you give us?
Yeah, say it again.
So online.
whoever talking now, grab another mic because I can't hear you. Your mic is not coming in.
How do people find you online?
Oh, I'm on at Antonio Tarver on all my social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At Antonio Tarver, and my website is the official AntonioTarver.com.
Awesome. And one question I wanted to ask before we let you go, what do you think about where boxing is as a sport right now, and what would you personally do to improve things if you were in charge of the whole sport?
Oh, man. Well, I think boxing right now, you know, it's just money in boxing, but they're just giving it to one person. I mean, of course, you know, Floyd Mayweather is on top of the mountain right now, and other than that, it's real limited with everybody else, and I think they're recycling a lot of the same bullshit, man, and they're not really opening the door for nothing new and exciting. I mean, these guys, the networks are buying certain fighters, and nobody's doing no promotion, nobody's building anything, because right now, it's they rather get easy money than really work to build something great. You know, when you look at me having an opportunity to become the oldest man to win the heavyweight championship, I mean, that's the shit that legacies are made of, and that's history. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, but when you got Floyd Mayweather and all these other guys, it's easy because the networks are buying them. They don't have to create a story. They don't have to create anything. They write the check. But what type of work you want to do? The easy work or the hard work? I mean, it's just simple. So what I got to do right now is I got to tell my story. My story has to unfold right before people's eyes and before they realize it, I'm going to something great, you know, and then they'll recognize what I've been telling them all along. You know, man, I'm going to get that heavyweight title, man, and by any means necessary. And I feel like I got everything skill-wise and passion and, you know, my determination, my work ethic, I got everything to do it. These guys are getting older, man. I'm looking at Vladimir Fate. He looks like an old-ass man. I don't know. I mean, my whole thing is different. I know that I'm 45, but I'm more youthful than a lot of those guys out there, man. I mean, those guys are aging bad. Life's been bad to those guys. I mean, I still look like I'm 31 years old, and I'm feeling like it. So, you know, my whole thing is this. That's going to be the difference. They think that a 45-year-old man is going up, but I'm the Benjamin Button to box. I'm rejuvenating right now, man. And I'm going to turn back the hands of time. They ain't sipping from the pound I'm sipping from. And I'm just here to tell you, man, stay tuned. September 19th, my quest for the heavyweight title begins with Jonathan Banks live in San Antonio. Don't miss it. The Magic Man is back. And the Magic Man is soon.
Awesome. Well, it's been great talking to you, and always interesting, some stories from somebody who's been in a movie and in real life boxing action. So,
hey, man, I appreciate it, man. Right before the fight, y'all reach out to me again, and we can talk some more. But right now, I got to say, good night.
All right, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you, Antonio.
All right,
that was great interview. Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
So we know he's on Twitter at Antonio Tarver. Yeah, his official website's on the Twitter profile as well. He's been good enough to retweet all our stuff, so check him out on there, follow him. The works. We only have a few more minutes left. I got to unmute Tom. Tom was having a lot of wind interference. Mr. Psychic had all kinds of psychic waves going around his microphone.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
I had to cut you off at the end to finish up here. But that was great. Antonio Tarver announced a fight, too. I mean, can't beat that. He's got a fight coming up, so he's definitely making that move, saying he's serious about moving forward with his career. I didn't know he was 45 years old, but... should have probably asked him a little bit more about George Foreman. He did mention him a few times. You know, if George Foreman can do it, he could. Sure. Yeah, I have a couple more stories. We talked a little bit. I didn't get into detail, but about these Commonwealth Games. And I wanted to mention that, Tony, you have always been like a broken record of headgear cuts. That's the one thing that they got to watch out for.
What's that? I you were cutting out for a minute. What were you saying?
Ed Gein nuts. You've always been pretty outspoken about, you know, the lack of headgear means more cuts. That's the one thing that you noticed about wearing headgear.
Yeah, and you figured because I fought a style that was very cut-friendly. And the one thing I've always come out and said, they said, you know, and this is, you know, not just from me, my experiences, but from also what I've watched. You get fighters, and I'm going to give you a perfect example. Guys like Arturo Gatti had to spar, right?
Yep.
If there wasn't headgear in sparring, Arturo Gatti would have never had a fight. Because he was a guy who, Mickey Ward wouldn't have had any fights. Basically, with the headgear, if you look at just the design of it, that it comes around the cheekbones, and that's fine because by you getting enough padding on your cheeks, that protrudes enough to help protect your nose. Obviously, not a whole lot. I've had mine broken a couple times, but at the same time, it gives it where you don't get the full total impact if it protrudes just enough. But that box right on the top of your head where it'll say ringside title, Everlast, whatever, Grant, that part goes and it covers the majority of your eyebrows. And so when you get hit on your forehead, you're getting hit on the padding. If you took an actual punch that was hitting on the eyebrow and it's causing your skin to go against that ridge and that bone, you get guys like Vito Anafermo, Chuck Wepner, those guys cut before you even looked at them. If they didn't have a headgear, they'd never be able to fight. But that's what keeps, you know, that protects just enough where the glove does not make complete contact with the eyebrow. Now, I've seen cuts happen in sparring. I know Mike Tyson years ago when he was champ had a fight postponed because he was cut in sparring. But at the same time, look at all the thousands of rounds guys spar. That you don't have cuts causing fight delays. Every day in gyms across the country, thousands and thousands of rounds and very few cuts. If they didn't have headgear, you wouldn't have any fights because 90% of the fights get canceled with guys being cut.
You don't want that. So they're basically...
No, you want the actual, you want them to get cut in the fight, not in the training. You want them to get cut for money, not for free.
But this is amateur stuff. They're amateur competitions, and I like about keeping headgear for those is, you're not just fighting once every few months, you know. If they want to do their pro circuit and allow these amateurs to be on the pro circuit and still maintain amateur status, then, you know, one fight every month or so is okay, but, you know, two or three fights a week in a tournament, you probably should be wearing headgear. I think I agree with that stance, but they're going to carry out a detailed study of the impact of getting rid of headguards after the Commonwealth Games are over. I don't know if they already are by now, but this mainly comes after an Australian boxer named Daniel Lewis failed a medical check that ruled him out of his welterweight quarterfinal last Wednesday. And he actually had a cut over his eye in a win against Nigeria's Kehinde Aduyima, whatever. Can't pronounce that one. So basically it failed to heal in time for him to meet his next opponent from India, who was given a walkover to the semifinals. And a growing number of cut head injuries have resulted from male boxers stepping into the ring without head protection after the AIBA changed their rules last year. So, obviously, more cuts, less headgear, more cuts. The correlation has been drawn. But they also say, we have to remember, without head guards, the number of concussion injuries suffered by boxers has gone down. They don't say how much. Let's just tough after a guy goes through all that much to you know, get that far in amateur competition. And, you know, you got to cut, and you're also still in the amateurs, and you're getting cuts. That's another concern I think they got to think about. I mean, these are only short fights. I can understand if they want to do it with their pro circuit and they want to do fights every month or so, but in a competition style event like that or the Olympics, I really think they should keep the headgear. Guys are going to be putting some headgear on maybe pretty soon. This dude, the clerk from the gas station robbery there, he's now been invited by the same gym where Anderson Silva, Lyoto, Machida work out in Texas, in Houston. This Mayura Disiniake, he took down a couple thieves during an attempted robbery. He's got now an open invitation to train with one of the best mixed martial arts camps in the world. Kenny Johnson, who honed his wrestling skills under the legend Dan Gable at the University of Iowa and works with some of the best fighters in the sport today, he sent out a video message publicly to Mayura and invited him to train at Black House MMA. Says that fighter from the convenience store, I want him to come train with us. I want him for sure. As soon as I saw that video and saw he was from Houston, I started calling a couple of people from Houston like, hey, do you know this guy? So whoever you are, I can't remember his name, so I don't want to mess it up. If you watch this, put the call out, come train with us. Kenny Johnson and Ed Soares said to come to Black House and train 100%. His skills are good. He's a big guy. We need big guys in here. Please come from Texas. Come on out. You can train Muay Thai with Daniel Veo. Wrestle with me, jiu-jitsu with whoever you want. We got 20 black belts in here. Please come train with us, and that would be fantastic. And as I mentioned last week, this guy is a native of Sri Lanka and was a champion there. And like I said, he's probably going to end up on the Ultimate Fighter pretty soon. Definitely should be having a any minute.
Well,
right,
yeah, I think that's kind of a feel-good story. So good luck to him.
Why not? And actually, that banger event is the next UFC fight. That's next Saturday, not Wednesday. So it's the 16th. So I guess we'll talk about that one next week. I guess that's all for us. We got the Talk Radio lady breathing down our neck. And Antonio Tarver, thanks for a great interview.
Yeah, that was great.
He just tweeted me thanking us for having him. He said it was a great interview.
Awesome. And that's all she wrote, folks. Thanks for stopping by.
That's a tornado.
All
right. I'm logging out. Hasta la vista, baby.
All right.
Adios, folks.